tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. U.S. President Donald Trump says he does want his summit with North Korean's leader to go well.
We will be doing everything possible to make it a worldwide success, not just for the United States or South Korea or North Korea or Japan, but for the entire world.
Meanwhile, as AP correspondent Shirley Smith reports, the future of some Americans in North Korea could be up for discussion pretty soon.
CIA Director Mike Pompeo raised the plight of three U.S. citizens held in North Korea during his meeting earlier this month with the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. This is according to a senior White House official who wasn't authorized to publicly discuss the sensitive talks and did speak to the Associated Press on the condition of anonymity. Yesterday, President Trump said the U.S. and North Korea are negotiating for their release.
And U.S. President Trump isn't passing up a chance to say whether he'll fire Special Counsel Bob Mueller and Deputy Attorney General Ron Rosenstein on the investigation into Russian meddling.
At a Florida news conference with Japan's prime minister, the president was asked if he's decided firing them is not worth the political fallout. He says all the speculation so far that he will fire them has been wrong.
For the last 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, and they're still here.
The president says he's cooperated with Mueller's investigators, turning over more than a million documents.
Nobody has ever been more transparent.
And he hopes the probe is coming to an end.
Former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani has joined President Donald Trump's legal team dealing with the ongoing investigation by Special Counsel Robert Mueller. He had notable difficulties in recruiting new lawyers since the resignation of John Dowd this month. Find more at voanews.com. This is VOA News. Miguel Diaz-Canel has been named Cuba's next president, marking the first time in 60 years the communist-run country has had a leader outside the Castro family. 57-year-old is the only candidate who vied for the job. He was chosen for a five-year term by legislators. He's a former first vice president and appears to be socially liberal, and is considered an acceptable successor to the retiring elderly leaders who fought in the revolution. The move was not expected to usher in a drastic change. Upon being sworn in Thursday, Diaz-Canel promised to continue the Castro's socialist revolution. Pentagon officials say that there has been no indication the Syrian military is prepared to launch another chemical weapons attack following last Saturday's missile strikes by the United States, France, and Britain, but Washington and its allies remain vigilant.
The head of the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons said a large crowd gathered at Site 1, and the UN Department of Safety and Security advised that the reconnaissance team should withdraw. He added that at Site 2, the team came under small arms fire and an explosive was detonated. A UN source told VOA none of the UN security team members were injured during the incidents. U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis said Wednesday the delays raised the risk of evidence tampering. The United States and its allies blame the government of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, while Russia and Syria insist no chemical attack took place. Ken Ward, the U.S. ambassador to the OPCW, claimed Monday the Russians had already visited the site and may have tampered with it, a charge Moscow rejected. Doug Bernard, VOA News.
Pakistan's unilateral fencing and construction of new observation posts on the long border with Afghanistan are progressing smoothly. That's despite recent deadly clashes between the two countries and traditional terrain-related challenges. Pakistan says its diplomats working in the United States are facing additional restrictions on travel from the host government. There was no immediate comment from the U.S. State Department, but U.S. officials have been ambiguous on the issue since Pakistan media reports on the new restrictions surfacing this month. Last week, the Undersecretary for Political Affairs, Thomas Shannon, in an interview with the VOA's Uzbek service, had hinted at the change in policy. Previously, Pakistani diplomats in Washington could travel around the country unrestricted. Russia has demanded compensation from the United States for its worldwide tariffs on foreign aluminum and steel, becoming the third influential member of the World Trade Organization to do so. China, the European Union, and India have also objected, arguing the tariffs are a safeguard measure to protect U.S. domestic products from imports. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbatha in Washington. Today is Friday, April 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A U.S. court has sentenced former Liberian warlord Mohamed Jabatai to 30 years in prison.
I think it's a good thing for Liberia, and it's dealt a blow to the culture of impunity in Liberia. I think justice has been done in this case on behalf of his many victims.
Martha Washington is a former member of Liberia's Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Zambia's main opposition leader has called for South Africa's intervention in resolving Zambia's political crisis. King Mswati III of Swaziland has changed his country's name. And there has been an uptick in fighting between Cameroon government troops and separatists in the country's English-speaking regions.
We heard gunshots. We did not know exactly what to do. Everybody was running up and down. It was the burning that made us to know that our lives were at stake.
Thomas Tuber is a maize farmer from the village of Anyanjua in Cameroon's English-speaking region, and recently sacked nurses in Zimbabwe seek a meeting with President Mnangagwa. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's post and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A court in the U.S. state of Pennsylvania has sentenced a former Liberian warlord, Mohamed Jabatai, to 30 years for his role in Liberia's civil war. Jabatai, notoriously known as Jungle Jabba, was found guilty last August for immigration fraud and perjury for deceiving U.S. officials about his role during the Liberian civil war. A total of 20 witnesses brought from Liberia testified that Jabatai or his soldiers killed civilians, raped women, and engaged in cannibalism. Jabatai admitted he fought in the Liberian Civil War, but denied he played any role in committing atrocities. Martha Washington is a former member of Liberia's Truth and Reconciliation Commission. She says the severity of Jabatai's sentence fits the crimes he is alleged to have committed and deals a blow to the culture of impunity in Liberia.
I think justice has been done in this case on behalf of his many victims. I know he was tried for immigration fraud, but we know that his gross human rights violations that he committed in Liberia played a very significant role in his conviction in the first place, and then the severity of the sentence that he has received today. I think it's a good thing for Liberia, and it's dealt a blow to the culture of impunity in Liberia.
As you know, there are other high-profile cases in the United States and elsewhere that are connected with the Liberian Civil War that are supposed to be coming up soon. Specifically, the case of Jokon T. Wowoyu, who also played a role in the Liberian Civil War. What is your expectation?
My expectation is that the Liberian people will also get justice in those other cases that you are referring to. The encouraging thing about it is that this is not Liberia, where the judicial system can be compromised. You can see where the law was really enforced. You follow the process with Jabatai case. It was a lengthy judicial process. And at the end of the day, justice was done. I think also that the past records and history of human rights violations in Liberia will also feature significantly in their own trials.
Back to the Jungle Jabba and the 30 years jail sentence. When does the sentence begin? Did the court say anything?
Honestly, you would still say he still got a break because his victims, many of them are not alive. You know, they caused other people to go in prematurely. The crimes were horrible. I mean, shooting a pregnant woman, in the vagina and those kinds of things, eating human hearts, you know, engaging in cannibalism in this, 21st century. Like I said, his victims are not around, their life has been taken. So he still got a break. He still has life. He can still breathe, he's going to still be moving around, though incarcerated and behind bars. But the thing is, life is the most precious thing under the sun, and he took the lives of so many other people.
You serve on the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and a final report was issued. There are many Liberians in Liberia and outside of Liberia who are calling for the implementation of that report. And the pressure is on the new president, George Weah, to implement the commission's report. What's your take?
I mean, I do agree with those Liberians and also internationals who are calling for the full implementation of the TRC report. I think it's long overdue. I think the report has been unjustifiably politicized. the last president, Mrs. Edith Johnson Sirleaf, dropped the ball with that report. Of course, she had vested interest as to why she was not going to, you know, work towards the implementation of the report. I'm hoping that, you know, this new president, Mr. George Oponwia, will really, really pay attention and will be that president who will really set the precedent as to the kind of society we want moving forward. You know, a society where people will be respected, where the rule of law will be respected, where human lives will be valued.
Martha Washington is a former member of Liberia's Truth and Reconciliation Commission. She was speaking with me from the U.S. city of Philadelphia. Officials in Cameroon say 8 villages in the country's English-speaking northwest region were torched this week, leaving hundreds of residents to flee for their lives amid clashes between security forces and separatist rebels. Moki Edwin Kinzeka traveled to the affected area and has this report from the town of Koum.
Yes. Hundreds of people have gathered on the outskirts of Koum, a town in northwestern Cameroon. Most were displaced from nearby villages by violence this week.
It was around 5 o'clock in the morning. I saw dead people lying down. I had to crawl on top of them and run for my dear life.
Terence Fuka, a 33-year-old pig farmer, told VOA he fled his village in Ajin Tuesday as the military responded to an attack by armed men.
I don't even know where my children are. I don't even know where my wife is. I don't know how far their pigs are doing, how many have died. I don't know if my own house has been burned. I am re-crying. I'm crying for the government to do something.
The military says armed separatist rebels torched at least 8 villages in northwest Cameroon. However, residents told VOA the fires were set by the military after the attackers had already fled. Thomas Tubo is a maize farmer from the village of Anyajua.
We heard gunshots. We did not know exactly what to do. Everybody was running up and down. It was the burnings that made us to know that our lives were at stake. So I decided to run away from Anyajua. When the military people invaded the area, the bridges were blocked and they decided to put them down with flames.
General Aga Robinson, who is commanding troops in the northwest region, said his soldiers were not responsible for the burning. The maize farmer laments that his village is now nearly completely deserted.
You see, it's a farming area that helps the whole division and the region at large. I don't know how we are going to cope if this persists.
The crisis began in November 2016 with a strike by Anglophone lawyers and teachers. They were demanding reforms to address what they say is the marginalization of the country's English-speaking minority by French speakers. The situation has spiraled into all-out conflict as separatists demand independence for the 2 English-speaking regions. 38 members of the military and hundreds of rebels have been killed in the fighting, according to Cameroon's Ministry of Defense. The UN Refugee Agency says tens of thousands of people have fled their homes, with at least 20,000 crossing over to neighboring Nigeria in search of safety. There appears to be little hope for dialogue. Separatists say they will not budge on secession. Meanwhile, Cameroon has refused to release dozens of detained separatist leaders, and President Paul Biya says he will entertain no talks that threaten national unity. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Koum, Cameroon.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, April 20th. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. King Mswati III of Swaziland has changed his country's name to the Kingdom of Eswatini. The king made the announcement on Thursday in the capital Mbabane during the 50th independence celebrations, which also coincided with the king's 50th birthday. But PUDEMO, the banned political party in the kingdom, has accused the administration of lavish spending, while the government says it does not have money to increase the wages of public sector workers. For reaction to the Thursday's double celebration and the kingdom's new name, VOA's Peter Clotty reached Mario Masuku, chairman of the banned opposition PUDEMO party.
Our problem is that where does he get the mandate to do that? Just all of a sudden he comes out and says this is the new name. Where does he get it? He's got a propensity of coming up with these surprises. He just goes out and issues statements that such and such an institution is now a university. This training college is now a university. Now, this naming Eswatini should be the consent of all people of Swaziland. What this means is just fulfilling what he is as an absolute monarch on his own. He just sit down with his family and then decide, this is what I want to do.
There are instances where some people have complained about the extravagance of the celebrations, which is 50-50. The celebration of 50 years of independence of the Kingdom of Eswatini, and now his 50th birthday celebration. Some people are saying that this is a big deal for the country, so the country should sacrifice to celebrate. Why do you differ?
Yeah, well, in a country where nearly 68% of the people live below the poverty line, where the rate of unemployment is soaring high to the 40%, where people are still struggling with the HIV and AIDS pandemic, really, what is significant of a head of state going to celebrate his 50th birthday? We believe that there should be priorities. And also to say, what has he done for the country for the past 50 years to celebrate and use so much money for that? Just recently, he bought a private airplane for himself. What is the necessity of that?
But the king needs to travel. His security is important. He's the king. He needs such to move from one place to the other, and that the previous planes were old and dilapidated.
Not necessarily. I agree, as a head of state, he must be able to travel from one place to the other, but not at the extravagance and also at the expense of the poor people. Just recently, the recent budget of the country, people are being taxed. Just personal tax have been raised for over 100%. Then you ask yourself, where did the money to buy this airplane come from?
Celebrating the independence from the former colonial power Britain, some Swazis are saying it should be celebrated and that people should celebrate the independence which brought freedom to the people of Swaziland. Why do you disagree?
Really, what is the significance? Even if it could have been a holiday, because it was the day to got independence. But really, do we need to expand so much? We definitely don't.
Mario Masuko is the leader of Eswatini's or Swaziland's banned opposition Pudemo Party. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the Eswatini's capital, Mbabane. Recently sacked nurses in Zimbabwe are seeking to a meeting with President Emmerson Mnangagwa after accusing the country's health minister of misleading the government on the nurses' demands for going on strike. As Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare, the nurses say they fear Zimbabwe is on the verge of a health crisis as the social sector has not been well-funded for years.
Zimbabwe's government says it has started recruiting retired and unemployed nurses to fill the posts of 16,000 plus striking nurses fired by Vice President Constantino Chiwenga on Tuesday. The government accuses the nurses of failing to return to work while their demands for better working conditions were being considered. But the nurses say replacing them is a recipe for disaster, as the country had only about 20,000 nurses who were already overstretched, as the government has not been recruiting for almost a decade due to budgetary constraints. Zimbabwe Nurses Association Secretary General Enoch Dongo says they now want to meet President Emmerson Mnangagwa.
We really feel shortchanged by our minister. What the nurses are asking is the hospital to be equipped with the modern equipment, to have the resources to use in the hospital. Nurses are more at risk, and they are asking for a risk allowance, which is reasonable. In the health delivery system, you find out that some other cadres, like General Hendo, they are getting money which is actually above a nurse with a degree, a nurse with a master's, or a nurse with a PhD, and that That distortion, that's what the nurses are asking the government to do. And it's not the issue of additional money. It's the issue of rationalizing the already money which is there.
On Tuesday, Vice President Constantino Chiwenga said he had fired the striking nurses for demanding salary increments as they had not appreciated more than $17 million they were recently given as part of efforts to improve their working conditions. On Thursday, the nurses said that money was actually for an outstanding payment which Zimbabwe's government had not been able to make from as far back as 2010. But David Parirenyatwa, Zimbabwe's health minister, maintains that his government is not going back on nurses that were fired Tuesday.
Those who have been dismissed will be needed to reapply if they want to come back to work. And I must add that we do want our committed nurses to come back to work. We are going to mop up all the nurses that are unemployed. First, the ones who are on strike and they come back and re-employ, they'll be taken. There's no problem with that. And the ones who are new will also absorb them. As you know, we were short of nurses anyway.
Zimbabwe has not been recruiting nurses, as in the case of most civil servants, for close to a decade now, citing bankruptcy. That has stretched the workload of nurses and other government workers. Now it remains to be seen how the nurses' impasse will be resolved, as they claim their dismissal is illegal. They said this Friday they would be offering free health services in Harare and Bulawayo, the country's second largest city. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Zambia's main opposition leader, Hakainde Hichilema, has called for South Africa's intervention in resolving Zambia's political crisis. Hichilema of the United Party for National Development, UPND, spent 4 months in jail last year on a treason charge when he failed to give way to the mudoke of President Edgar Lungu. He has called on the Southern African leaders, to put pressure on President Lungu to restore calm, or, he said, Zambia could descend into economic confusion. Speaking Thursday in Johannesburg, Mr. Hichilema also accused President Lungu's government of political killings, rights abuses, and rampant corruption. The Zambian government has denied the allegations, but Charles Kakoma, spokesman for the UPND, says the record is there to see that the Zambian government has been cracking down on its critics.
In the past few years, we have had people that have died as a result of the repression that is taking place in Zambia. I can give you instances, one of a young lady that was killed by police as she was going to attend a political rally for the UPND, and Hakainde Hichilema was supposed to address that rally, and they killed that girl in cold blood. We have had other incidents where a university student was also killed for wearing the UPND uniform or regalia. It was seen like by the ruling party to be an offense to wear opposition T-shirt. And we have had other cases where a party official was killed here in Osaka for merely belonging to the opposition. And there are many of these extrajudicial killings that are taking place. I believe that is what is referring to, that people have been killed at the hand of the ruling party and the state. This has to be brought to an end. In terms of problems of corruption and so on, it is so rampant.
Mr. Kakoma, first of all, the Zambian government has denied these killings you're talking about, but also with the elections coming, the government says all these allegations are part of an attempt of an opposition that is running out of ideas.
Well, the bottom line is that blood is being shed, people are dying, and that has to be brought to an end. Whether the government denies or not, but it's happening. And some of these cases, like the one I referred to, the young girl that was killed by police, the matter is even in court, so they cannot deny it. Yes, the election is coming, and we are saying that the political violence has to end before the next election in 2021, because it is unforeseeable that we can conduct credible, free, and fair elections in an atmosphere of political violence.
Are you suggesting, Mr. Kakoma, that the UNPD may not take part in the upcoming elections unless something is done?
Well, we are saying that these problems to do with the political violence, the problems to do with the corruption, problems to do with the uneven playing field, the rigging of elections, several methods that are being used to regulate, those, all those things that are creating conflict in Zambia have to be resolved before we go to the next election. Obviously, if these things are not resolved, we do not expect free and fair elections.
Charles Kakoma is a spokesman for Zambia's main opposition United Party for National Development. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. Time now for Daybreak Africa's Pulse, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin with the CAF Confederations Cup, where Tanzania's Young Africans and Algeria's USM Aga are among 15 clubs that will accompany Egyptian Premier League side Al Masry in the group stage of CAF Confederations Cup. The CAF Confederations Cup playoff round wrapped up on Wednesday with 12 matches across the continent and featured progress in the group stage for the likes of Aldwana Stars, Enyimba, Al Hilal, Gomahia, and Raja Casablanca. The group stage draw is scheduled to take place tomorrow in Cairo, Egypt. The head of the Democratic Republic of Congo's Football Association, who also serves on World Governing Football Body FIFA, was provisionally released on Wednesday after being held for 21 hours as part of an embezzlement probe. But three others who had been taken into custody with him on Tuesday evening, Sport Ministry Secretary General Bartlemy Okito and two FECOFA Vice Presidents, Roger Bandembe and Theobald Beamungu, will remain in custody until the investigation had been closed. And now to Kenya, where Harambee Stars defender Abuad Omar has been sacked by his club Slavia Sofia after he was accused of insulting his teammates and coaches. The problems had been going on for several months, with the Kenya international accused of also showing disrespect to Bulgaria. And back here in Nigeria, President of Nigeria Football Federation Amaju Pinnick says Super Eagles' preparations for the FIFA World Cup in Russia is on track. Speaking with sports journalists in his Abuja office, Amaju Pinnick reaffirmed the desire of his board to provide the best environment for the team to excel at a global showpiece.
The World Cup is every Nigerian's desire for Nigeria to do very well at the World Cup. In November, when we crossed Nodo, we had a meeting with the team. We sat down with the team. We signed a contract with them.
Staying with football news, former Premier Soccer League general manager and referee Ace Nkumbo has revealed that South African Football Association president Danny Jordan will be out of office by May 31st. Ace Nkumbo, who has called for Danny Jordan to step down, held the second press conference in the space of 1 month at the FNB Stadium as he addressed the media.
The Congress did not take place, so we achieved what we wanted to achieve. But there still remains a risk, because on the 28th of April at that Congress, they want to adopt a resolution to hold an elective Congress on the 19th of May. If we win the battle to have a secret ballot, I can tell you that they will not have a Congress on the 19th of May.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend, and we look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that's it for this Friday, April 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with our engineer Dave Magnus. I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very, very good weekend.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.